all your school rugby all in one place. This is Next Gen 50.
Hello and welcome back to the Next Gen 15 podcast. Season 2, Episode 3, we've spoken with Jonathan Pendlebury, the England Under 18 head coach. We've spoken to Dan Murphy from Hartbury College, Joe Burns, one of our commentators and presenters. And now we have Chris Roberts from Limitless Kit. Chris, good to see you.
Hi, Angus. Great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. An absolute pleasure. And we can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Acast, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. And please get in touch on @NextGen15 across all social media channels with any of your thoughts, complaints. I'm sure there'll be plenty. Anything else you've got to say? And where can people get in touch, both with you and with Limitless, Chris?
Yeah, Limitless Kit is @LimitlessKit. And personally, it's @CMBRoberts.
Excellent. Well, we know where people can go if we start getting controversial. Then it's all Chris's fault. I promise you that. He's led me down the garden path and made me say things I don't want to. So we'll blame you. We might as well start. I mean, you've got the most rich and glorious rugby background, from playing to coaching to getting into the world of kit and all the rest of it. It's been quite a journey.
Yeah, it has. You know, kind of looking back at the CV, I sometimes pause and gosh, you just think, you know, how did I have the time to do all of that? But it was great. I found myself almost falling into teaching. My initial background was in sports event management, and having done the Commonwealth Games in 2002, found myself a little bit of a loose end, because that was a kind of a temporary contract when the event was over. I had an opportunity to go into teaching, and the rest, you know, 18 years later, I'd had some fantastic experiences at St Andrew's Prep School in Eastbourne, moving on to Eastbourne College and coaching their first 15, some fantastic memories there. A little bit biased because that was where I went to school as well, and certainly wearing those.
What was that like, coaching your old school? I mean, that's got to be a funny feeling.
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And I think where you look at schoolboy rugby and the purity and the joy and the passion of schoolboy rugby, I'd experienced what it was like. You know, for anybody who's been down to Eastbourne College, it's a really iconic first 15 pitch that doubles up as the first 11 cricket pitch right in front of the school. And the first 15 shirt was a slightly unusual one. It was blue and white and 8-inch squares. And so when you first join the school, you know, as a third former in old money, you look up at these mountains of men. And the captain of rugby at the time, that some of the older listeners will remember, was Will Green, who went on to have a glittering career for Wasps and for England. And you're looking at these giants of men thinking, oh my God, you know, how am I ever going to be the same as you one day? And the ability, and I still remember very, very vividly, and it was a slightly anticlimactic moment, being picked for the first 15 and getting into the changing rooms. I remember it clearly. We're away at Cranbrook, first game of the season, and getting into the changing rooms, and the captain of rugby, you know, the difference is now, you know, these lads and girls walk into the changing room and everything is laid out beautifully for them. Everything's on hangers, you know, recovery drinks there and all sorts of things. Whereas the captain of rugby essentially had an enormous kit bag, and as he pulled out these brand new shirts, looked at the number and just kind of chucked it across the changing room. And I was like, oh, slightly anticlimactic, but at the same time, I still remember holding up this shirt and it being one of the proudest moments of my life. And probably still living in the past, I've got that shirt framed and on the wall. So for all the things why I was so proud to play in that shirt, I understood where the players were coming from when I was coaching them. You know, the history and the pride that went into that shirt, running out onto college field and playing some of these traditional fixtures that have been taking place for decades and for centuries, really. It enabled me, I guess there was a bit of credibility there. I'd literally been there and I'd done that. But also, I thought, probably brought out the the best side of me as far as passion was concerned.
Yeah, it makes the emotional side of coaching pretty easy when you've quite literally walked those steps yourself, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. And it was difficult to kind of move on really from there. I then moved on to King's Canterbury to be director of rugby. And, you know, at the time, although that was a little bit of a wrench to move away, it was great as well. And I learned a huge amount. You know, I cite Paul Westgate, who I worked under a bit when I was at Eastbourne, as a really important mentor for me to learn a lot of things. And it kind of felt that it was important that I moved on and made my own ship. And similarly, you know, you make your mistakes as you go. I had a great time in Canterbury, love living in Canterbury, and both my children were born there. Yeah. And then a stint at St John's Leatherhead, where I kind of had the best of times and the worst of times in a really short period of time.
Yeah.
A fantastic group of players, a fantastic group of lads. And, you know, in that kind of roller coaster of time, there was a magnificent tour to South Africa. As I said, great group of players, great group of lads, and you can't underestimate the experiences and bonding of that. And seeing some of these lads now, I've coached them on the seven circuit. I still see them around. You've got the likes of, you know, Jack Musk that has gone on to play professional rugby for Harlequins.
Of course.
And it's a real reflection of the bonds, but also those lads that when they come up to you, it's not a handshake and hello, sir. It's hi, Chris, with a little giggle and a hug.
Yeah.
So I look back at that time, you know, hugely fondly, but then, you know, coming out of education gave me the opportunity to do other things. And whether that was grassroots rugby or focus a lot on the sevens, but it was also, rather than a midlife crisis, it was, you know, a midlife readjustment, I think is probably, you know, to call it.
That's the modern terminology, is it?
Absolutely. There was no Harley Davidsons and things like that. But, you know, having then gone into the sportswear industry, and I find myself with, you know, an incredibly exciting project with Limitless, which for those who aren't aware is the sports offering of School Blazer. So we're going great guns at the moment and really excited to be working with some fantastic schools across the country.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff as well. I've got my T-shirt on today, keeping me cool. It's a rare opportunity I get to wear the Limitless clothing that keeps me cool, because I'm largely on a touchline in the middle of winter trying to stay warm. So it's a rare treat to be in the T-shirt. You've made me think though back to your Eastbourne changing rooms. I remember back my first experience of first 15 changing rooms back when I was at Uppingham, and we similar thing, you know, kit bag dumped in the middle of the room, grab your shirts out. The only one concession we had to sort of a bit of special treatment was the coach had already unpacked the number 3 shirt. Because our tight head was a big boy, and we were just on the cusp of shirts starting to get a little less baggy, and he very kindly, before every game, he'd put it over the bin just to stretch it out before it. that was the one concession we had to getting special treatment. That and who knows if this still goes on, we won't get any schools to confirm this. That and a slab of beer was put on the middle of the changing room floors by who knows who. It was never confirmed or denied who put that there, but it was certainly there, which was always...
Well, I'm sure it went down well after a hard-fought game.
Always a welcome treat. I'm sure it's probably League's Aid now, I've no doubt. No doubt at all. Let's talk a little bit about getting into the sort of sportswear industry, because it's actually, certainly from my perspective, it's kept you in touch with the school game, because you're around... talking to schools all the time. You know, Limitless were sponsors at the Rossin Park National School Sevens last year, and I'm sure will continue to do so. It's been a good way of being able to stay in touch with what's going on.
Very much so, and as you say, Rosslyn Park was fantastic this year. You know, it was our first year getting involved, and again, your listeners will all know it's, you know, the biggest tournament in the world. And what I found was it was absolutely exhausting, but it was 5 days of talking to people and watching a little bit of rugby. The conversations were with friends, you know, having been in the game for a few years. It was a genuine joy of catching up with people, having conversations, and also meeting a lot of people. You know, that could be existing customers who were just popping in to say hello, or new people that we hadn't met before. But I think the beauty of all of that is we're all there for, you know, the common ground and common reasons, which is rugby, and particularly rugby sevens. And from my side, it has very much kept me in lane. And I'd like to think adds a little bit of credibility, because I've been in their shoes. You know, I know sometimes the difficult conversations with bursars about budgets, you know, difficult conversations with heads of co-curricula that are taking away a game session in order to give it to a trip or to music and various things. And also from an internal perspective, it's, you know, being able to offer, albeit an opinion. And I think as you'll appreciate with sport, whether that is, you know, discussing how England are playing, or what a good rugby shirt or netball kit or cricket is, you know, you've got a lot of passionate people within sport, yeah, who have all got their opinions. So from my side, what it's really enabled me to do is offer my thoughts and opinions based upon the experience of working within sport, but also working within schools as well. But ultimately, it's been brilliant just to keep up those connections that have been established over the years.
Yeah, well, it's certainly great for us to have you there, because we got ourselves a couple of decent co-commentators as well, Rachel Burford and Alex Goode, who almost dropped himself in it has to be said. He announced by accident on mic that he'd signed a new contract with Saracens, and then turned to me and went, was that live? Okay, yeah, it was.
Well, you got the exclusive there.
I was going, I really can't decide whether we should make a song and dance out of this or just gloss over it. I went, you know what, we'll gloss over it. He's doing everyone a favour here. And lo and behold, I just thought, well, it'll be next week, so, you know, nothing to worry about. It was only 3 months later, I think, that it came out. We had to sit on that for ages. So, we certainly enjoyed that.
Both Alex and Rachel were absolutely fantastic on the day, and it was so great. You know, Rachel obviously doing, you know, some commentary work with you. She's got her girls rugby club, and she's doing a lot of things. But I think the same with Alex as well. Just as far as the interest in terms of our branding, but also the engagement around the place, it was absolutely brilliant, and nothing was too much trouble for them. Whether that was, you know, a queue to have selfies, or, you know, it kind of boils down, they're just good people, first and foremost.
100%. You know, and we it was a real eye-opener for me, particularly with Alex, because he had been quite literally on those fields before. But Oakham had just won the school's cup, and he was desperate to watch them as an old boy. He was desperate to catch up with Dosser Smith. He was itching to get them to get his eyes on them. And when he was doing some commentary with us, we were trying to work out the right game to watch, because he was going, I need to watch Oakham. I've got to watch Oakham. So we had to squeeze him into the right game so that he could go across and watch them. And then we ended up with this brilliant scenario where he was commentating on, I can't remember who Haileybury were playing, but Haileybury, who of course are coached by Michael Owen, who he played with,
of course,
at Saracens. And suddenly you have this guy who would be very easy to just go, I'm just here to do what I'm here to do. But in fact, he was just unbelievably engaged, which goes back to what you were saying of actually your school days are incredibly special. And, you know, the sort of boyish excitement he had of being able to actually watch an Oakham game was incredible.
And I think the problem was they were playing on the Asda pitches as well. And
yeah.
By that stage, the rain had come down a bit like Glastonbury. So it was a combination of sloshing to get over there as well as all the selfies. So I think it took them about half an hour to get over and watch. But no, you're absolutely right. And I think linking with that, I can remember seeing before he became England coach, Stuart Lancaster talking about when he came in with England A and was trying to find various connections amongst the players, and one of the questions was, you know, what's your most memorable game? And he said, out of a squad of about 23, he said, you know, 19 people. You know, these were people that had played for England before, who may well have been on their way down, or people who were Premiership champions. And 19 out of the 23, and that's probably 22 at the time, recounted a school's game. And you know, whether that was, you know, playing for Whitgift in the school's cup final, or something, dare I say, a little bit lesser. It evokes amazing memories, and I think it's, you know, it's the history and the tradition that has gone with it. But at the end of the day, you're playing with your best mates. You know, you're playing with people that you're in the class with, you're eating with. You know, you might start, you know, in a dorm. I think now it's all kind of ensuite bathrooms and hotels now. But you know, there really is nothing better. And although some of these players may well have dreams about playing for a professional contract, they're not doing that on a Saturday. You know, they're literally playing for the school and they're playing with their mates. And for me, when it comes to rugby, there's nothing better.
Yeah, I mean, I say it, but I may already have written it today. I'm doing my preview for the weekend, sort of either side of this chat. But the sentence I always say at the start of every season is that for the majority of players that are playing this year in their first 15s, you're not going to play a better standard of rugby going forward. This may be as good as it ever gets. And that's no negative. That's something to embrace and enjoy. And even for those that are going to go on to higher things, this is about as special as it's going to feel for you. It'd be very proud moments for some of them when they, you know, they run out for a first appearance for a pro club, they run out for a first England cap, all the rest of it. But actually, they'll never be playing in an atmosphere where, you know, for many schools, you're quite literally living with the people that you are playing alongside. They're your best friends, you know, you've got shared experiences off the field that are your everyday life. You know, it's not just nipping down for a coffee. It's, oh my God, have you done that bit of homework? You know, well, we've got exams coming up. Oh, I've got detention. Whatever it might be, a shared experience of growing up. It's a completely different beast to any other rugby that they'll play again. So for everyone, it's like, go and savor what's coming, because yeah, these are sort of heady days.
And I think it's a bit big brothery, isn't it? Because you know, you don't listen to Big Brother until it happens. And you know, it's interesting, obviously, listening to your pod last week and touching upon Buck Super Rugby. You know, Buck Super Rugby is fantastic, and it's only getting bigger and bigger as you know, an opportunity to play some fantastic high level rugby. But not everyone is going to go to a Bucks Super Rugby University. And I think the challenge being that to keep people in the game, you know, they are going from these, you know, incredible environments with their best mates, with environment set of such a high level. And whether that might be kit or training 3-4 times a week or strength and conditioning programs. And they are going to some university programs that are a step down from what they've come. And I think the challenge being is that an element of, well, I have stepped down. I'm not going to carry on. This isn't what I'm used to. So I think, you know, I'm not quite sure what the solution is, but I think certainly the advice of savouring your school days is an important one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I remember it well when I moved to university, and the so I'd taken a gap year. I played a year of club rugby, but I knew it was kind of, I knew that was a different beast, so I wasn't really thinking about it in those terms. But you know, I'd heard a lot about how university sport was massive and all the rest of it. And I moved to uni. And I remember being shocked. You know, that very first day, it's sort of trials day. Rugby, I'm going, there's no coaches really. The pitches are rubbish. Like, and I was at a good uni. I'm going, what on earth is going on here? And it took me a couple of weeks to go, well, you know, you've just got to get on with it, really, don't you? But also to go, I'll tell you what, took it for granted a bit at school, but geez, these were some good facilities and some seriously impressive people around me that you almost just don't realise it at the time. So
I think you know, perhaps the social element is different at university. You know, that might work. Well,
there is a bit of that. You know, you can put up with a rubbish pitch and all the rest of it when the social element makes up for it like that. Probably why I ended up regressing somewhat as a player. That and the lack of growth, almost certainly. But I tell you what, the other thing that excites me about what you've been up to the last few years is some of your some of your work on the Seventh Circuit and with Samurai RFC. And again, I suppose it's once again, it's another sort of good way of staying in touch with this sort of school's grassroots game, because so many players we see coming out in that in to run around on that Seventh Circuit have come straight from the school programs, and the amount of times you see a guy come through and you go, oh, how is he mixing it here? It's just incredible. But that, I mean, that circuit's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, sevens ultimately is my passion, and that started. I was very lucky. My father was in the hotel industry, based out in Asia when I was growing up. So my first real contact with rugby towards the top level was the Hong Kong Sevens, and that was absolutely fantastic.
That's a pretty decent introduction.
Well, absolutely, but you know, as a 7-8 year old, it was busy running around getting, you know, David Campese's autograph and various things while the parents were busy doing other things in the South Stand, that type of stuff. And I was really lucky to go to the Hong Kong Sevens for a number of years, and that kind of morphed into actually understanding and watching the game. And then as I got a bit older, you know, understanding, watching the game, and having a few beers as well. And that passion for sevens absolutely remains. I had an amazing opportunity to get involved with Samurai RFC. It was close to probably 13, 14 years ago. And at the time, it was Sam Howard leading the way. Sam Howard of Dulwich legend fame, and where he was at the time. And it was a great opportunity. He basically, you know, set it up with... The idea was that he was looking around the Seven Circuit and seeing these absolutely unbelievable players, and particularly around Roslyn Park, and the thought of, well, you know, where's the pathway for sevens? You know, we'd always struggled for a pathway, and Terry Sands had done an absolutely unbelievable job and continues to do so for sevens, you know, in the UK, but internationally as well. And you know, much to his frustration, there wasn't this clear pathway. So here was an opportunity in creating the Samurai Bulldogs to essentially pick kids. So I'm a bit Alan Hansen here, but you know, pick guys who were, you know, 17 years old, who have been coached fantastically well and coached at sevens fantastically well. There are some brilliant sevens coaches within the school's game. And anyone who tells you that it's, you know, it's the same game is absolutely wrong, in terms of how it needs to be played, how it can be played. So these players were coming from these fantastic environments, and it was still invitational rugby, as Samurai RFC is. That they may well know each other from the circuit and even be teammates for representative level. But they were meeting on the morning. We were having a quick run around for familiarity, you know, chucked a shirt and play. And we were winning tournaments. You know, we were going, you know, early days going down to the, you know, the East Grinstead Sunshine Sevens. And one of the most memorable, you know, wins of the mind, you know, was a Callum Sheedy with a couple of Tom Whiteley led sides.
Yes,
you know.
I was going to say, I'm sure I remember seeing a team photo that was stacked with very recognisable names nowadays.
You know, it was, but you know, these lads were 17 years old. They were still schoolboys playing against some very, very strong sides, whether it was the Jesters, whether it was Apache, or Isha in their pomp. And they were just going out and just playing and just expressing themselves with no pressure. And it was an absolute joy to watch. And, you know, several years of the Samurai Bulldogs, you know, the number of players, you know, there's a really, really long list of quality schoolboys that come through. And you can see it now. I think Ellis Genge played a tournament when he was at Filton. That was the summer social at Richmond. He was a fairly scary character then, if I'm honest.
Direct, but, I should imagine.
But, you know, play very direct and you know, playing number eight at the time. And, you know, there was almost the element of, you know, keep him locked up to a quarter final and do some damage. And he did. And probably the other notable one in the England squad at the moment is Ben Earl. You know,
yes,
Ben,
of course,
Ben was, you know, a superstar at schoolboy level and, you know, a man versus boys, captaining that England under-16 squad as it was at the time. And it's brilliant to kind of see him you know, get that World Cup squad. And ultimately, I think the thing with all the players, there will be some common ground here. They were good blokes. You know, they were really, really good people. And all the coaches, you know, some brilliantly experienced coaches who were doing it for the love of the game, an opportunity to do so, just makes that such an amazing program. And you even look to recent times that were, you know, guys who were schoolboy stars in their own right, you know, Jamie Barden, Cranley, yeah. Jamie Adamson, if I'm honest, as a couple of my favourites are. I must throw another Barney boy in there and Max Pepper. And he'll get a strop if I don't mention John Searle as well. But, you know, the opportunities...
John Searle was an exciting player. Well, he still is an exciting player.
But, you know, the pathway that we've provided for these players to play international rugby, you know, on that Super 7 series, as well as the HSBC World Series, it's been amazing. I look back very, very fondly, although I didn't get a tournament in this summer with demands of work and family. I look forward to getting the whistle and the boots out again moving forwards.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you've got me thinking about Schoolboy Sevens players now. I'll tell you what, Ben Earl could be a fantastic Sevens player if he wasn't so good at 15s, couldn't he? My word, he's so quick. He's so skilled on the ball, and he can do all the dirty work as well.
No, absolutely. And I think it's hugely important. And I know the school's coaches may well be shouting at me because they've got the clay they're given. You know, rather than picking the balance of a side from a representative level. But I think within that, it is understanding that within sevens, people seem to think, right, we play a certain way 15s, we get to the seven season, well, let's just chuck it around and play wide. Now, the reality is, if you've got, you know, a monster pack, you're not suddenly, you know, picking a flyer to come in. You've got to take the clay you're given. And the reality is, you might play Route 1 direct rugby. And certainly if it rains again, like it did at Roslyn Park this year, next year, you know, that might be the road for some people. But, you know, the beauty of sevens is that there are a number of ways to play it. But fundamentally, you know, it's a game of rugby that, you know, involves it's evasion, but you've still got to have those terrific one-on-one contact skills. There's no hiding in there. And the ability to pass the ball off both hands is absolutely key. So although I am hugely, hugely biased, I think, A, it's a fantastic game at the top, but also I think it's an amazing development tool. And I just feel really, really sad that the program across the UK seems to have been largely marginalised. Ireland very much, you know, leading the way on that in terms of, you know, this neck of the woods. But, you know, you see the number of All Blacks that have come through the Sevens program. You've got a couple of, you know, French guys that have come through that Sevens program.
Yeah, Villiers on the wing. And exactly, when you look at the things that people give him praise for, they are seven skills.
Without doubt. And he was essentially plucked from playing in the Hong Kong Sevens, you know. So it's an amazing opportunity. I mean, some of those guys I mentioned, you know, Jamie Adamson, Jamie Barden, you know, I'm sure certainly, you know, Jamie having done his MSc from Durham to get that extra year of rugby in, he'll be making his fortune in the financial services industry at some point. But for now, as a young lad to tour around the world playing rugby, what a great opportunity. But as I said, it just feels there's a real shame there isn't a pathway there, and perhaps that pathway isn't quite there because that I say pot of gold at the end, but that realistic career at the top end isn't quite there for them anymore.
Yeah, a lot has changed as well, hasn't it? Yeah, there was that time where the England Sevens team was almost used as almost part of the academy system. You come in, you play a couple of years of Sevens, you move on to 15s, and I don't know. I mean, negatives in some ways in that doesn't exist as a route for people anymore, and then positive in the other sense in that the Sevens team is a Sevens team, but it does mean that perhaps you lose out on some of the best players around. But I'll tell you what you've got me thinking about now. This was not something I was expecting to start getting into, but so good luck to you because this is going to be off the top of your head. But best schoolboy Sevens players you've seen?
It's a tricky one because...
Or most enjoyable. How about that?
Most enjoyable. If I'm honest, there's I think John Searle's up there.
Yeah.
And I've got to know John quite well over the years. You know, there was an element of seeing him on the other side of the pitch as I was coaching sides against his Brighton teams. And that, you know, that was, you know, a stacked side. That was, you know, that was Marcus Smith, and that, I was going to say that was Alfie Beadle in his pomp, but he's come back to his pomp and going well again. But yeah, I've always quite liked the way that John just plays how he wants to play, you know, and that's with freedom, that's without structure, and he just does things that no other player can really do. And you know, there's been element, and that's just not going forwards. You know, I was coaching him in a side, and big Danny Barrett, you know, the USA forward who was knocked over a lot of big world class players over the years. And John's knocked him into touch. He's done the same with Tom Van Dell at a tournament a couple of years later. But I just enjoyed. Stroppy as hell if things aren't going his way. You know, the number of times we've also seen him with, you know, the two handed teapot on the waist, giving the body language of I'm not quite happy with this. But I would also, as I touched upon earlier, I would throw Jamie Adamson into that bracket as well. But I think there's also an element that I like them as people. I am a little biased there. But Jamie being, you know, a great lad, he's suffered some injuries over the last few years as well, but he's always bounced back. He's such a hard worker, will always do it with a smile on his face. And, you know, he completely appreciates where he is and what people have done for him, albeit he's done the hard work. He's grateful for the opportunities. You know, we've had, you know, if I went back in terms of either watching guys at Roslyn Park or guys who have played for the Samurai Bulldogs, because that includes, you know, the schoolboy. You know, I did mention Tom Whiteley and Callum Sheedy, you know, earlier on. They were kind of freakish at the time, and obviously you see Callum has gone on to international honours, and Tom with a professional career as well. But there's been a couple of bolters that you know have come out of that process as well. But I'm probably leaning towards the guys that I've had a lot of involvement with over the years. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, it's, I just find it fascinating because I guess because you see, you know, you go through the school circuit and you see guys on the 15s field, and then you see them on the 7s field, and because of that extra space, you know, good players will always be good players, but you just get the opportunity to see what they can do so much more frequently because there is that space and that ability to just go out there and show everyone. Yeah, I remember Cameron Redpath basically winning a Roslyn Park final on his own. Yeah, I don't even think the other six players on the field for Sedbergh in that game would necessarily have much grudge with that. He produced a length of the field try-saving tackle followed by a length of the field try-scorer. You know, that's a 14-point swing right there. But Tom Whiteley, I loved watching him play sevens because he just, no one could do anything about those feet of his at all. And then he was defensively quite savvy. He knew he was not going to be able to smash people because he's small, but he used to have this amazing ability to just allow people to pass him, snaffle them by the ankles. You're a one-on-one situation. He's stealing the ball, and then he's got the field in front of him. And he was brilliant at it. It was a real lesson in defense is as much about thought as attack is, and you know, just putting your body where it needs to go rather than trying to win something that isn't a winnable situation for you. I used to love watching him play. It always surprised me actually that he didn't get sort of nudged towards playing sevens at a higher level. He's done all right anyway, hasn't he? But it always, always did surprise me that. It seemed like an opportunity for him. But anyway, let's move towards the actual current school game, given that the season is starting in, well, less than 48 hours from where we are right now. One of the things we're going to be doing again this season, as part of our partnership with Limitless, is bringing back the Limitless Top 5 School 15s of the weekend. So that's five. It's not necessarily the best five teams each weekend, but it's sort of, you know, five teams that have stood out to us. So that could be, you know, you're a school we're expecting not to do so well against a really top level opponent, and you may still lose, but you get in touch. Or it could be, you know, let's, for the sake of argument, say Sedba versus Millfield, where, you know, it's such a high pressure scenario for those two teams that a good performance in that is got a real premium on its value. It's about picking out teams that do things beyond just kind of what you expect in any given weekend. So we're going to be bringing that back and hopefully having some cool teams and a bit of variety in teams as well. We had some really cool sides that got into it last year. The Judd were one of the early teams that got in because they had a fantastic season last year. They're absolutely incredible. But yeah, taking on the big boys in the region as well, you know, going toe-to-toe with neighbours Tunbridge. In fact, I think they might have beaten them.
You might be right.
Just absolutely fantastic. And RGS Guildford as well, you know, they've probably got a more storied rugby history than someone like the Judd, but they had some outstanding performances last year, having, you know, not been competing right at that top end of the school game. Suddenly they found themselves mixing it with the very best around. They got in a couple of times. And in fact, those two play each other this weekend. So we're certainly looking forward to that. And getting some good Limitless promotion out there as well.
Yeah, good. And Angus, I know, you know, with your predictions and teams of the week, you know, your social media lights up from people who feel they've missed out. But
yeah, mainly because I'm wrong every week. That's
well, but I think it also just shows that there is a huge interest in the following with people, you know, at the schools. And from a Limitless perspective, we're absolutely delighted to be involved with Next Gen, but also, you know, support this, because we, for all the reasons that you've said why you publish it every week as far as who the teams are and why they're in there, that really marries up with our ethos as well. So yeah, delighted to support that.
No, we're very excited and very excited to be able to talk about loads of different schools. You know, that the main reason that we try and do these things is to be able to talk about lots of different schools, give them their moment in the sun and talk about what they're doing on the pitch. Speaking of on the pitch, we've got some new bits and pieces this season. I mean, it's not new news, I suppose, but the tackle height changes for this season. You know, the teams will be working on it through pre-season, but they're going to be getting their first sort of live exchanges of adjusting the tackle height. My sense is at a school level, it's not going to make a huge amount of difference because no one's hitting high at school level anyway as a matter. I mean, people do accidentally, but people just want to get the ball and play has always been my view at a school level particularly.
Look, I'd agree with you. I, you know, when you know, you sent through a couple of things to talk about, I saw tackle height, and I don't know if I was going to be controversial to go, well, this is a bit of a non-event really, isn't it? That, yeah. You know, in a couple of the WhatsApp groups that I'm a part of, the general chatter is it's a non-event. How many high tackles have you seen in X number of games? Yeah. You know, that these players tend to be coached absolutely outstandingly. There's no doubt there is an emphasis and a duty of care and safety for these players as well amongst their coaches. They're in fantastic environments. But I would suggest that it comes back down to the basics of the game. Bring the player down, get the player down on the ground. Now, of course, tackle choice within certain situations is very important. You know, there's a player that is going to go over the line, and if you go low, they're going to go over the line anyway. You might have to go higher and target that ball. But the reality is, I think that the majority of players and coaches out there, first and foremost, it's going low, bring a player down and create a contest. But as you say, I don't think the tackle height is necessarily an issue within the schoolboy game.
No, I mean, to be honest, I think the place that will be the biggest not issue, but where it will probably have the biggest effect is actually at sort of lower level adult club rugby, where players are unfit. And I can say this because I've been one, where players are unfit. they're sort of lazy at getting to places. They're not hitting high to be particularly dangerous. They're hitting high because they're too late to bend down or too lazy to bend down. Yeah, it's all of those sort of things. That's where it will probably come in.
I'd agree.
But yeah, at a school level, I don't see it making a huge difference. And I actually think the bit that's been overlooked is that because of the goal line dropout laws, people are a bit worried about, you know, as you were sort of mentioning, those tackles around the try line. It's actually in your interest in a lot of ways now, to just fall back with the player who's getting close to the line anyway. Your job now is to get between the ball and the try line, because it's a dropout. You don't have that threat of the 5 meter scrum. So where previously we were all obsessed with making sure people didn't cross your line, now you're going, actually, a good outcome here is for you to cross the line. As long as I get my body underneath you, what's the problem?
Absolutely. So actually, and look, the reality is, you know, you're not seeing too many people tackling like Owen Farrell and Billy, and whether that is at first 15 or under 14 Ds, you're not really seeing it. And, you know, they'll get it wrong. Of course, they'll get it wrong every now and then. But that tends to be off the back of a mistiming or a sidestep or whatever it might be. That I don't believe that's going to come from, right, we're going to look for a choke tackle. We're going to look to really target that ball and getting that wrong. So
people will get it wrong because they always have got it wrong. You know, 100%. That's just the law of any sport, is you will occasionally fall foul of the laws because people make mistakes. It's probably not going to be anything more complex than that.
And I think the powers that be, without going on my soapbox, do not give directors of rugby and referees at schoolboarding level enough credit for the environment that they are creating and the programs that they are running. They're absolutely outstanding out there. And, you know, and whether it was the half game rule that came in or involving this tackle height, that you know that in the vast majority of these environments, it will be dealt with an empathy in a pastoral way that you would like to think and expect, and particularly when people get it a little bit wrong.
Yeah, I've always been a fairly strong advocate of, you do not need to over-regulate the school system. The schools do a pretty good job of getting it right, and just find the ones that are getting it wrong and have a word is always my kind of view. Directors of rugby and coaches across schools, they're pretty good. They know what they're doing. They've been doing it a long time, and funnily enough, what with them being teachers, they do tend to have the best interest of their pupils at heart. So
100%.
You know, it's easy to just allow them to do what they're going to do, and probably worth doing. So, speaking of other changes, Schools Cup this year. This kind of came in at the end of last year, but obviously, you know, new season. It's kind of a bit more set in. New sponsor for the Schools Cup, Continental Tires. Not especially relevant, I suppose, to us in this particular moment in time, though it will be once the cup is up and running next week. But I suppose the important thing really is that with a sponsor, that suggests there might be a little bit of money, which suggests there may be a little bit more refocusing on trying to make the cup as good a product as it can be and as good a test for players as it can be. It sort of had its struggles the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Bit of worry from schools about playing Wednesday, Saturday, you know, and trying to keep players healthy and try not to overuse players, and kind of, yeah, schools not competing in it, etc. And hopefully just with a bit of emphasis from a sponsor might just spark a bit of life into it with any luck.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that the cup has lost its way ever so slightly for various reasons. You know, the days of the Daily Mail Cup moving on, obviously, onto the NatWest. And then I think with a lack of sponsor for a little bit as well, it just kind of felt it lost its way and lost its credibility. And I think that the presence of the cup is a good and important one. But there's always been the various challenges there as far as one-term rugby schools and two-term rugby schools. And the, you know, the one-term rugby schools that might go deep into the cup, and how that obviously then corresponds with hockey and football programs and various things. And, you know, it's got its place, And, you know, although the winners of the Cup are crowned, you know, national champions, you know, when you scratch the surface, it's almost a couple of routes for some teams out there who are playing a really, really tough one-term circuit, and others who are not involved in that cup competition. Yeah. There's definitely a place for it, but yeah, it just feels it needs a little bit of a push.
Well, that's the thing, and you kind of hope that with a sponsor behind it, there's a will to do that, and hopefully it all works out. I'll tell you someone who's got a bit of a will to do something special at the moment, though. Newman College, Cardinal Newman, winning the Esher President's Cup. Now, I know that, you know, the team's had players that involved in under-18 academy stuff and all the rest of it, so not everyone's at full strength, and it's pre-season and everything else, but that's a pretty interesting outcome. You know, traditionally speaking, a smaller school coming and mixing it, they've obviously got their links with Ealing Trailfinders nowadays, but it's always a bit spicy when you get someone from outside of the traditional bubble coming in and mixing it with the top guys.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting kind of project down there, as far as, you know, a college who has really kind of taken the scruff of the neck in offering and producing a really quality rugby program. And I think, you know, chicken and egg, but creating that environment has obviously then meant that, you know, players who want to play a good level of rugby and have that opportunity have started going there as well. And as you say, yeah, there's always a little bit of an eyebrow that gets raised, but, you know, with the support of Ealing, that you kind of think it's not going to be a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
You know, there may well be, you know, challenges as far as, you know, playing some of the larger independent schools because of block fixtures and various things. But what you are seeing more and more of is, you know, a Friday night lights before an exeat, or, you know, something midweek before a half term. So, you know, if you know, they're going to be around the place, let's embrace them. And if it is a quality fixture and a quality experience for all concerned, it should be embraced.
Yeah, 100%. I always think it's great when you start getting new faces knocking around. You know, we've had Ipswich doing similarly in the last couple of years. We've seen others have their moments in the sun as well. It's you know, you want as many different schools from as many different places as possible starting to mix it. I'm going to come on to Seaford College at South Coast Kings, but I'm actually going to come on to that later, because we're going to talk about them a little bit later with regards to their fixture coming up, because they're in our 10 to watch. So we'll have a little think about what's coming up. You know, the season ahead, I mean, I guess from a limitless perspective, and I suppose a little bit your own, the big thing on the horizon in terms of the schoolboy circuit is once again the Rossin Park National School Sevens.
Yeah, it is, and from our perspective, we're already starting to do some substantial work. Had a good call with the organisers the other day, and as ever, they're looking to make things, you know, bigger and better without losing what they've already got and making it special. You know, they want that to be a really quality experience for both players, you know, and spectators. And from our side, you know, we're really looking forward to being there again. And although our relationship with them gives us that little bit of focus, we're still very much invested in the 15 season as well. And of course, we're talking a lot about, you know, the boys' side of things as well, and the girls' side is equally important to us as well. The girls' 15s game within the season isn't quite towards that same level, but we are seeing within sevens and possibly tens moving forward, that is that entry into the game. But also, it's only going to take a certain amount of time, because we're in this lag period, I think, with girls' rugby, whereas it's going great guns. We've got a number of year groups that are either starting to play the game for the first time, But lower down, we're seeing more and more girls, you know, playing the game, and we expect there's going to be more involvement with the 15 side. But you can certainly see within Roslyn Park as well. I think one of the most enjoyable games I watched was the, I think it was the under 15 girls final that Hill House came through. Absolutely, you know, terrific game. And, you know, absolutely quality rugby to watch as well. So there's no doubt that girls' game is coming to the fore. But yeah, look, we kind of park sevens, you know, for now. It's in the future, but the near future. And from our side, you know, we provided a huge number of first 15 sides with their kit for this 15 season. And I look forward to either A, getting out to games myself, B, seeing social media, or seeing Next Gen streaming it.
Hey, we'll get you on a bit of co-commentary as well. That's what we need. Dab hand on the mic. It's interesting what you say about the girls' game as well. You know, we were down at the Hartbury College pre-season festival. There were, you know, ace colleges, some Welsh schools, some English schools. But there was a boys and a girls' competition. In the girls' competition, you can see the standard just year on year is increasing as you get more and more girls playing. Because sort of as you kind of alluded to, the issue has always been not enough schools having enough players to create that sort of inter-school fixture list. But I think as we see more and more girls playing lower down, you'll start to see that filter through, and you actually might start seeing some schools starting to be able to build a bit of a fixture list, because, you know, we're desperate to add more to our coverage as well. It's just in the last couple of years, it's been a really tricky thing to do before seven season comes in, because the circuit doesn't exist to the same extent. But hopefully as that circuit builds, we can start to build it in, because there's so much excitement around it, and it's such a different atmosphere. Maybe it changes as time goes on and that circuit becomes more embedded, but there's a real sense of kind of joy when you watch the girls' game. It feels like a completely different beast. Although I am going to need to get on some of them about team sheets, because the girls' game has a real habit of giving us team sheets with just first names on it, which is very familiar and probably speaks to that joy I'm talking about, where, yeah, everyone's particularly friendly and all the rest of it. But there can sometimes be, you know, eight Jesses and four Claires hanging out, and we're trying to identify which one's which. So hopefully we start getting more detail on the team sheets. That'd be nice. Yeah, it's an exciting season ahead. It's an exciting few months ahead. We've got a Rugby World Cup that's going to run in tangent with the school season, which I always think, you know, we get this opportunity once every 4 years where you have this ultimate rugby inspiration happening alongside people getting to go out there and play for themselves as well, which I always think is great, because you watch, you know, well, certainly over the last 10 years, it was you watched the All Blacks play and you went, right, let's see if we can do that when we go and run out. I guess the tricky thing this year for English players is they're watching a team that doesn't appear to be doing any of the things that they're being coached at home, which is tricky. I just can't get my head around. We're not going to get into England's style of play overly, but I find it extraordinary that we have this system where schools rugby is led from the top, actually, in many ways. Gone. We need to have a very skills-focused approach to, you know, focusing on the development of players and getting that wide range of skills, making people comfortable in possession and free in making decisions on any part of the pitch. And then they seem to progress to the pro ranks. And rather than that sort of embedded knowledge that they've got over the last 10 years of school and youth rugby, it's okay, cool, that was all very interesting, right, we need to teach you how to play structure. Yeah, I find it bizarre. Because it's not as if the schools have gone off on their own tangent. It's come from the top. They've said, this is how we would like you to coach people. And then they just ignore it. I can't get my head around it.
I mean, Harlequins have been the interesting kind of maverick, you know, say problem child, but that'd be the wrong description, as far as, you know, let's just play, you know,
yeah,
well, we don't mind if we concede 30, we're going to score 31. And that has just had people on their feet cheering. And I can still remember, and like him or loathe him now, I can remember when Clive Woodward was in charge. And he said, the way that he wanted to play the game was in a style that he had 82,000 people at Twickenham going absolutely nuts. And that stuck with me. And that had an impact on me as far as, my coaching was concerned, that there's got to be an element of enjoyment to play, but also an enjoyment to watch. And that could well be the one bloke with his dog down the park watching it, or 82,000 people, or at a schoolboy game. And we're probably on the one side. There'll be just as many people who involved in that pro game that may well come back and say, "Oh, it's different. You don't really know what you're talking about," sort of thing. But which is where I think Harlequins have been interesting. That look, and you could talk about structure. Every team out there has got some sort of structure. It almost just depends, and it almost just depends at what point does that structure or those rigidity get thrown out the window and you tear it up. You'd like to think that you've got a game plan and you've got a way of playing, but you're still going to play what you see. And you just get this impression sometimes that there is a feeling towards the top of the game. Yes, it's still attritional. We're seeing slightly different with these 3G pitches, but grass pitches in February, you're probably not going to be prudent and wise to just throw the ball around willy-nilly. It's probably going to be easier to play without the ball. Certain stats, and I think it's obviously what Stevie Borthwick went off when he won the title with Leicester, is the team that kicks the most tends to win the game. But my God, it's boring to watch. And I think certainly when you're watching teams, and certainly England, it's the rigidity of the pod. Even when they don't need it, sometimes it's a beauty. Straight hands will do. Straight hands is okay, even at international
Yeah,
level,
exactly.
if you've got the space.
Numbers are numbers.
But similarly, the feeling of I'm not going to do something off script for fear of getting told off, or for fear of getting dropped or a bollocking. So it's infuriating being an England supporter. Thankfully, I was born in Inverness, and I'll be supporting Scotland. I'm actually in Marseille
You're
this weekend.
speaking my language here. You're
Yeah,
speaking my language.
so I'm actually in Marseille this weekend. So I've packed the sun cream, 32 degrees. So you think it's going to be, I'll still be supporting England on Saturday night. Don't get me wrong. I live on the south coast of England, and I've been here for most of my life. I'll be supporting England. You do think they're going to have a tough time of it, and yet there's still this kind of feeling of glimmer of hope. Of that something is going to happen. That it's amazing at
Yeah, well,
times within a World Cup.
they're going to get to a
Well,
semi-final.
they could do
That's the thing.
very easily. What I was about to say was, at the top of the game in a World Cup, it's amazing what winning can do. But I think that even the most diehard of England fans, if they had a choice between watching England Argentina on Saturday or Scotland South Africa on Sunday, I think they're probably going to pick that one. And just because of the prospect of the most enormous South African pack, it's absolutely terrifying. And that's just who they got on the field, let alone on the bench. And how Scotland are going to need to play to break that down. The magician Finn Russell is going to be having to put these offloads and putting people into space. And I think that excites people, and the prospect of that is exciting.
I tell you, I saw a clip actually last night on Twitter. Sorry to interrupt, but it was the last time Scotland and South Africa played, and Finn Russell. The clip was by a South African talking about, Finn Russell's in for a nightmare on Saturday, and it was a compilation of massive hits that South African players had put on him. One of the first comments underneath it was, "He got the ball away every time," and you just go, "He has not got fear in his mind about getting whacked. As long as the ball gets away." He thinks job done. Well, it is job done. He's drawn someone out of the defensive line, and the ball has moved. He's off
I mean, no, you're right. I mean, he's exciting to watch, and if you do look at that Scotland side, it's a really, really exciting side. But obviously, with cricket having had centre stage over the summer, much has been made of Bazball and the style of playing Bazball. Now, if you actually drill down in terms of perhaps what Bazball is and how England played. It wasn't reckless abandon trying to smash every ball, but you did feel there was a freedom there to have a go. And you know, you look at the way England play, you know, I think there's a lot of English supporters out there that still remember Argentina as this side that, you know, we would be given a token match of the autumn internationals without actually realising they've been playing against the best sides in the world in the rugby championship for some time.
Yeah. They've been New Zealand in New Zealand, you know, 100%. They're a proper side.
You know, and they have, you know, they have got all the tools at their disposal to beat England. They're ranked higher than England, and there's an element of, you know, if you're betting your mortgage, you're probably betting on Argentina. So is there an element of, well, the pressure's off England ever so slightly, and the public could get behind them if they just gave it a go? But, you know, there's no evidence to suggest that that is going to happen. And you know what? They'll take a one point win with a scrum penalty at the end.
Yeah, you know, well, boring rugby's fine as long as it wins, I suppose. The trouble with boring rugby is that as soon as it starts not working, everyone gives up on you pretty fast. One thing I would perhaps throw a bit of advice out to them on is, I'm sure it is true that the team that kicks most tends to win. It's probably also important to kick well. So I don't think you can just draw the raw stat. You probably have to dig into it deeper, and perhaps that might be what's worth doing.
Well, I think the one that's driven everyone crazy, just to finish off this bit, is that, you know, having made a bust and have got quick ball to turn it into slow ball outside an opposition 22 and put a little dink over the top to no one. That's probably the one where you go, look, I might sit on a bar stool and have my opinions, but I've got no flipping idea what you're doing there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not to bring it all around to the Scotland South Africa game again, but I watched Finn Russell play, and I think that is how you do it now. Forget who he used to be, you know, where there were errors coming in. He's not an error stream player anymore. He's a player who makes unbelievably good decisions under pressure, and would get into a 22 in that scenario and go, right, just where's the space? Perhaps the space is a kick. But he will just look, where's the space? How do I get the ball to that space as fast and efficiently as possible? And that's how simple the game is. It's hard to do, admittedly, but it is a really simple game. Yeah. Find the space, put the ball there. But anyway, we could go off on one about the World Cup. So let's circle back to school rugby. And the weekend ahead, first weekend of the season, most exciting weekend of the season, I always think, because it's the, you know, no one has a clue what's coming. No one knows who's going to be good, who's not. No one knows who's going to perform above expectation and who's not. No one knows really how those different year groups are going to blend. I always think that's the hardest part, that no one ever really recognises, sort of in a wider context in school rugby, is that particularly in the first few weeks of the season, you are bringing together people that have never played together before and suddenly saying, off you go. And it's a real challenge, because it's the first time that in any context, lots of these people will have gone out, and it's a completely new team. You've spent 4 years playing with all the same people, and then suddenly, as that under 16 year group going into the first 15, and it's suddenly like, right, we're not the big dogs anymore, because the upper six for that, and we're going to have to learn to play with completely different players. You know, I could have had the same halfback partnership my whole school career, and now suddenly, you know, I'm the 10 who's supposed to be running the show, but I'm only just, you know, I've only just made it through the age barrier. My birthday was on the 30th of August, and I've got this man playing inside me who I'm supposed to direct around and all the rest of it. But yeah, he's the boss. There's so much complexity to all that.
And I think what you've got to also appreciate is which sides have been on tour.
Yeah,
that's often a big factor, and what's happened during pre-season. You know, we touched upon earlier on, you know, that bonding experience of a tour, and that can be really important, as you say, of bringing those 2 year groups together.
Yeah. So looking ahead to the fixture, we've obviously got our 10 to watch for the weekend, which for those that are listening to this before having read our weekend preview, it's Harrow against Clifton College, John Fisher against Eton College, Merkeston Castle against George Watson's College, RGS Newcastle against St Peter's York, Rugby School versus Oakham, which is live streamed here on Next Gen 15, Seaford College against Hampton, Stowe against Stamford, Tunbridge against Brighton College, Warwick against Bromsgrove, and Whitgift v Sedbergh. obviously loads going on all across the country, but difficult to give everyone maximum airtime all the time. Otherwise, we would quite literally be here all week. But any of those that particularly stand out for you?
Yeah, there are a few. I'll be brief. I think the, you know, the Merkston Castle George Watson one is an interesting one. You know, both have kind of, well, certainly, you know, Merkston have lost a little bit of rugby IQ with Bruce Aitchison moving on, but yeah, also had quite a lot come in with Nick DeLuca. You know, that rivalry up there is enormous, and as big as it gets within a schoolboy game. RGS Newcastle, St Peter's York. I mean, RGS Newcastle have had a really great couple of seasons, and St Peter's York is one that, you know, I remember from being younger as one of the big boys in schoolboy rugby. And they've had a really difficult couple of seasons, few seasons if I'm honest, on a really, really tough circuit. But they've had a changeover of staff. You know, Chris McTurk joins them as director of sports from Barney Castle. And I think what's interesting is he's a St Peter's York old boy as well. So for all the reasons we said earlier on about going back to your old school, he'll want to be instilling that passion and getting St Peter's York up that ladder again. Again, turnover of staff at Oakham. You know, Dossa Smith moving on to some of the biggest rivals across that Rutland triangle.
I love that. I love that. So good.
And Andy Rice as director of rugby, moving into a different role. So Rupert Harden comes in as director of rugby, who comes with a good pedigree and a good reputation from Denston. So it'll just be really interesting to see in terms of, you know, him putting his own mark on a programme. And obviously they're coming off the back of a tour to South Africa, a big tour to South Africa, but also as cup holders. Tunbridge Brighton's a fairly local one for me. I always kind of found that whether I was a player or a coach on the circuit, that Tunbridge was a little bit of an Everest. Never managed to beat them playing at first team level, but had a couple of times as a coach.
Was it 2004-05-06? They went 3 years in a row unbeaten or something. I'm not that much of a geek. I am a geek, but I only know that because one of my best mates was one of the Tunbridge players amongst that, and he never lets anyone forget that they went 3 years unbeaten.
I have to lean on you for that one. But certainly, you know, it's, you know, playing against Brighton College, it's not, dare I say, a traditional historic fixture, but certainly one that should be on the fixture list. Two different styles of playing. You know, typically Tunbridge have been quite, well, you know, South African as far as, you know, up front and quite a devastating driving maul that's been their hallmark for a while. Yeah. And Brighton College with that freedom that Nick Boyd puts on the players as far as play what you see, play for enjoyment. And then the final one of that list from the top 10 is Wycliffe Sebba. Yeah. You know, the Simon Mulholland, I think was it director of rugby of the decade, the century, the millennium.
I think that was the gong we awarded him.
It was, and you know, the Sebba program is a little bit of a monster. You know, the location aids in terms of the culture of the program, but there's no doubt that the energy comes from Noxie. He's a really inspiring figure, and I think that, you know, Wycliffe Sebba fixtures are big ones, but the reality is, I think that any fixture that involves Sebba, you keep an eye on.
Yeah, you certainly do. I mean, they're just perennial. They've forever and a day. They've been fantastic, but certainly under Noxie, they are just perennially one of the two or three best around at all times. It's absolutely phenomenal what it's done there. But as you say, it's the culture they've got going. It's just incredible. I'll tell you what really stands out for me is Harrow Clifton. It's a new fixture for this year. But I was chatting to James Melville in the off season, largely because I was down in South Africa with the England under 18s, and we were watching two of his boys absolutely tear up in Kepi Tuivalu and Charlie Griffin. But he's talking to me about this fixture, and they've sort of torn up the model a little bit for this one and gone a little bit South African in style. So they're playing, I think it's a 3:45 kickoff or something, taking advantage of the late September light. And they're playing back-to-back-to-back fixtures on the first team pitch and building a real atmosphere, as you see so often in the Southern Hemisphere, which has always been a real challenge to do here in the UK, obviously, because you've got Saturday lessons Yeah, and you've got that many fixtures to get through and all the rest of it, and plus, you know, no daylight. So we've only got about an hour and a half's worth of playing time available to us on any given Saturday. But they're doing that, which I think is really exciting. And obviously both were incredible teams last year and look set to be up at that top end again this year. You know, both have retained an awful lot of players because they were quite low sixth heavy last year. And of course, Harrow, we saw at Ross and Park Sevens, were dominant at pretty much every age group. So I don't think they need to worry too much about the production line. But I'm really excited to see that sort of building the fixture through the day kind of concept in action on these shores, because we don't get to see it often. And it'd be cool, particularly when we've got the daylight in September, to start seeing other schools pick up on that kind of idea. And then obviously, I mean, you've touched on Rugby Oakham. We're over there live streaming it. We're actually live streaming every single rugby school game this year. But don't worry, listeners and viewers, we're going to be far and wide beyond rugby school as well. But it's 200 years of rugby, which of course all started at rugby. And so they're putting a huge amount of effort into the season. Every single game is a home game, to try and give as many people as possible the chance to be kind of part of the fanfare, but also just to play on the field where it all began, which is quite nice. And I think we've got 14 different schools that are going to be appearing there over the course of the season. But it's a hell of a way to start rugby in celebration mode, and probably pretty eager to get celebration mode off to a top start. And doesn't get a lot trickier than facing the Schools Cup champions in doing that. So I'm always excited by that one. I'm always excited by derbies to kick off the season as well. Warwick Bromsgrove, I love a derby. And I love this derby in particular. And I've whilst writing our preview, I've sort of been digging in on it a bit. So they always play September and December, top and tail of the season with that. They've not actually managed to do it since 2019, but since, you know, between one thing and another, COVID, the death of the Queen, etc. They've just lost fixtures. So they're finally getting to do this. Well, fingers crossed, as long as nothing happens between now and December. They're finally getting to do this top and tail of the season again, which I think is really cool. And then John Fisher Eaton, I always like, because you've got, you know, one of the most successful state school programs ever, really. I think, you know, probably them and RGS High Wycombe are the two you're looking at as the ones that have had the most success. And they're hosting, you know, the most famous public school in the world. It's this massive clash of cultures, you know, Eton swapping Windsor for Croydon. You know, it's just everything about it. I just love that fixture. I love that it's a season opener. I just think it's fantastic. And I'm very interested in Seaford College against Hampton as well. Seaford touched on it earlier. They won the South Coast Kings. Sean Thompson, once the head of rugby at Hampton, now the head of rugby at Seaford. You know, they would know each other inside out. Both sides, I think, they've got some good players. They might be knocking around at the top end this year. Seaford have certainly revamped their fixture list completely. So I'm very interested. It's not going to be a quiet opening weekend. That much is for sure. We're starting with a bang.
And I think on top of that, Angus, that whether it is this weekend or moving forward, there's probably a few that I'll be keeping my eye on. One of them is Berkhamsted. Again, turnover of staff, you know, Tom Pearce coming down as, you know, from director of rugby at Warwick to go in there as director of sport. And there's a bit of a dream team in there with Rich Pryor joining as director of rugby as well. And I do think that Berkhamsted has been one of those schools that has been on the rise for a while, but I do think they could really explode. I'll be keeping my eye also on Bradford Grammar School. Moran joins as director of sport with Dan Scarborough already there as director of rugby. That's a slightly emotional one for me. I can remember back to, you know, my under 15 Daily Mail days, and Bradford Grammar had just gone back to back winning the under 18 Cup. Yeah. Now they haven't quite you know, gone back to those levels, but I know with that team there, and certainly Jack, although he looks old, he's a young guy with bags of enthusiasm. Other ones being, you know, Abingdon. You know, you mentioned John Fisher. You know, Matt Gold had a number of years there at John Fisher, and I know he remembers that fondly. But although all his enthusiasm is in Abingdon now, and you're seeing that kind of Kaizen gradual improvement over the years, and Goldie being one of the most enthusiastic people you'll ever meet. And then close to home for me, for the reasons where we started, is Eastbourne College. My alma mater down the road. I'll be going to watch a couple of games. Ollie Torrey has done a fantastic job there, you know, over the years, and continues to do so. But, you know, as you say, it's almost slightly unfair to pull some of these out. There's lots of stuff going on, and there'll be some exciting stuff over the season, Angus.
Yeah, and it's particularly unfair in this opening weekend, really, because you have no idea of the lay of the land. So it's all just history. We're just throwing history at everything and hoping that we've kind of thrown the dart in the right direction. As the season goes on, you start to see the stories. I mean, as I said right at the top, most exciting part of last season in many ways was watching the stories at RGS Guildford and the Judds start to emerge. Really exciting to see those two playing each other to kick off this season. You know, really looking forward to that one. I'm also quite interested in Ipswich heading over to Uppingham. You know, Ipswich have moved right to the top end of the school game. Uppingham, once upon a time, were pretty close to that place as well. Not there anymore, but, you know, a lot of new people around. How do they get on against a big heavyweight? That's not one. Yeah, that's the sort that could get into our limitless top five, not by necessarily winning, but by staying in touch. You suddenly go, okay, I'm impressed by that. So there's going to be a few, but picking out that, I like that Bradford Grammar against Ampleforth College fixture. I mean, you've basically got the team of the mid to late 80s going to take on the team of the early 90s. And how cool would it be if they were both knocking around at the top end of the school game in the, what are we now? God, mid 2020s. Let's not think about that. Let's steer well away from that sort of thought line. But no, so we've got an exciting weekend ahead of us. We've got an exciting season ahead of us, and we're going to hopefully be hearing much more from you. If not in future podcasts, I certainly hope so. But certainly on the microphone. Around a few grounds over the course of the season, I'm sure we can twist your arm into opening your mouth and giving us some expertise as teams run out onto the field.
Be delighted to do so, Angus, and I think I kind of talk on behalf of a number of people out there that between you and Richard Jackson, please keep up the good work.
We'll do what we can. We'll do what we can. We've got plenty of schools to see this year. We'll see if we can keep everyone happy. Always a challenge, but a challenge we like. But that is it from us for today. We want to get this one out to you before the season starts, which is, well, tomorrow evening, really. So do remember to please subscribe and listen. I'm told that helps a huge amount, not just the listening, but the subscribing. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Acast, and all the other places you might think to look. And you can watch us, if you are that brave, on YouTube. And please do get in touch, as I said, on at NextGen15 across all social media channels. And Chris, is over to you to tell me all about where people can get in touch with Limitless and indeed yourself.
At Limitless Kit for Limitless, doing some exciting stuff. And you know, a lot of this has been on about Roslyn Park. Please do get in touch. We've got some fantastic offers at the moment if you'd like to get a bespoke sevens kit. And for any reason you want to get in touch with me, it's at CMB Roberts.
Well, there we go. That is how to get in touch. You can tell him all about how unusual it is to be supporting both England and Scotland on the same weekend. But for the meantime, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Chris, thank you very much for joining us and previewing the opening weekend of the season. Thanks very much for listening, and join us again next time.